the expression from the music inspired me so much to take risks, and it inspired damn near the whole rap game.
Hello again, I'm Adam Ons. You may know me as the host of The Opus, and now I'm bringing my own show, The Spark Parade, to the Consequence Podcast Network. I speak with artists and creatives about the cultural artifacts that spark their personal interest and creativity, whether it's music, books, movies, video games, or any other kind of art.
I've never spoke about it in this amount of detail. I'm suddenly going, oh my God, I'm blowing my own mind here, Christ. It's actually a giant part of my life.
By talking about the things we love, we share and discover insights into our personality and the things that drive us.
It's just magic, really. I mean, frustrating. And it makes some people angry, but I don't think anyone's ever done anything like it.
I speak with people like Connor Roberts, Phoenix's Thomas Mars, Chris Gethard, Helen Hong, Adrian Young, and more, so their sparks of inspiration can start a fire in you.
I'm grateful for those who continue to put our history and who we are as a people in the forefront and make you see it.
Find the Spark Parade wherever you get your podcasts.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Modern Drummer Podcast. My guest today is the one and only Gina Schock from the Go-Go's.
Hey you guys, how you doing? I'm happy to be here with Billy. It's a beautiful day here in Brooklyn. Yeah. I wish y'all were here.
Yeah, this is our first live interview in a long, long time that we're doing something like actually at my studio. And
this is really a fantastic setup. I mean, this is the perfect setup. He's got it's for a drummer. This is so happening. I mean, I wish I had this set up at my house, but hopefully I can get it together. I mean, when I'm in my house in LA, it was fantastic. I had a studio, but since I moved to San Francisco, you know those Victorians?
Yeah.
No, man, I got to figure out a spot. I do have a place where I rehearse, but I want my own spot, like at my house, which is what I've been used to. Anyway, sorry.
You know, you could always come to when you're in New York. You could always come here.
That's nice.
You have an open invitation, especially now that you're.
Now I'm a best-selling author.
Check this out. Now, what I love about this book is it's not your typical biography. It's a photo book, but it's a little bit more than a photo book because, as we were talking about before, when we were talking about the book, it's photo-driven.
Yes, absolutely. So, Billy, this book has been, like, percolating for decades to put this together, but because I have so many photos that I have in my possession, all my own personal stuff that I've kept over the years, stuff that I have where I've taken the shots, stuff that I've collected, you know, photos I got, posters I got, buttons I got. I mean, every tour guide. Every tour book, I've got everything from every tour I've saved it because they all mean something to me. And I want to be able to look at it and remember what was happening, you know, and it's at that particular time. It's wonderful to have all this stuff. And of course, now it made complete sense when I go to put this book together. I was just going to have it be all a book, a photographic history of the band,
right,
coffee table style. You know.
But which it is.
Which it is.
But it's more.
Primarily. But it's more because then the publishers came to me and said, are you interested in writing something? Which immediately I was like turned off by because I thought, I'm not a writer. I don't know how to write a book. I can write songs, can't write a book. But then when the fellow that helped me put this book together, when Steve and I sat down and started going through all the photos that were actually going to be, because I picked out 500, okay? And he was like, no, I got to do at least half of them, half of that amount. So when we started narrowing it down, and I realized what was really going to be in the book. It started flowing. The words started. Yeah.
The memories, because the memories come back.
You look at the photograph and remember what you were thinking when you took it. And then you remember what was actually going on during that period of time.
That's
in your
what
life.
Makes it so personal.
So it evolved into a book of photos and words.
Right. Yeah. And it's great because like I love this.
My drums were set up in my bedroom.
That's
how I learned to play drums. I'd come home from school every day, put headphones on. Where's another picture of me with the headphones on? And play with my favorite my favorite songs and my favorite bands. And I taught myself to play drums that way. Because I've never taken lessons.
And you started playing bass first, right?
I started with bass because, okay, so the story as it goes is that, and the truth, it's true. My brother took me to my first concert, which was Led Zeppelin opening for The Who in 69.
What a show.
I was 11 going on 12, and that really blew my mind. I was 11, and I believed that I knew what I was going to do with the rest of my life. And as it turns out...
That's what you did.
I did do exactly what I thought I was going to do at the age of 11. I watched what happened on that stage that night, and all I could think of is, I got to be up on that stage. I don't care what instrument I play, just I got to be on that stage, man. That's what I want to be doing.
Magic.
That
was the magic.
And so then I started, I was already spending all my money on concert tickets and albums and magazines.
Probably Cream magazine. I saw a picture of you with Cream magazine.
Cream magazine, boy, had a shirt. Yeah, okay, so I was already spending my money on that, but then I thought, okay, I got to start buying instruments, so I bought a bass first, then I bought a guitar, and I tried playing those, I took lessons, and I did not have the patience for them, bottom line is, when I bought drums, and I sat down, and I put headphones on, and tried to play my favorite song, deal was done. It was right away that I knew that was my calling. I didn't have to think about it. My body just did what it was supposed to do to follow those beats that I was listening to on those headphones. It was really natural and easy.
Did you take lessons, drum lessons at one point?
I talked to Jeff Beccaro about taking lessons from his father, Joe, at one point, but I never did. I never did wind up doing that.
Yeah, you didn't need it.
My style was pretty set.
Yeah.
Good or bad, it's what it is.
And I read in here, I think Charlotte said, I think it was Charlotte who said, when you first got into the studio with Richard Goddard.
First thing he said, slow everything down?
Right, because punk, you guys came from the punk scene.
The Go-Go's are a punk band.
Right.
We always will be. When we play live, I think that shows a little bit. We're a little rough.
Well, that attitude.
Rough around the edges and that attitude.
And then you had the attitude of sex, drugs, and rock and roll. Everybody thought you were sweet, innocent little girls.
I know, right?
But you know what? That's what made the attitude, and that's what made it work.
Yeah. It was the five of us together, and it was like us against the world. We're going to show people what we got. None of those record companies would sign us. They weren't interested. An all-girl band had never been hugely successful. Nobody wanted to, take a chance with us. Finally, we did, after, 20 no's, we got one yes. That's all it took. It was Miles Copeland at his little independent label, IRS Records, distributed through A&M, did the record deal. We didn't get paid much. We didn't have much money to make. I think we had $60,000 to make that first record. But what Miles did that was brilliant is he brought Richard Goddard in to work with us. Now, Richard...
He knew how to make records.
He's a song man.
Yeah.
That guy knows how to write hit songs.
Yep.
And he understands music. He understands the label. He started Sire Records with Seymour Stein, the guy... Right. He's brilliant.
Yeah.
And he put us with Richard. And plus, Richard had... We also loved Richard because he had just done the Blondie record. I mean, we were really into him. So he put us with Richard. We went in and came to New York, started working on the record. We made Beauty and the Beat here.
And then, we got the beat. I mean, that song is one of those songs that you could just hear that intro and you know what song it is.
I know. I feel like I am like one of a handful of drummers in the whole world, in the history of music, whatever, where you hear the drum beat and you know exactly what's coming up. You know what that song's going to be just by that beginning of the song, that drum beat, that sets it up.
Yep.
And you know what? That was dumb luck. That was just me playing what I felt. It wasn't something that I thought about. Charlotte brought in, the eighth note progression on the guitar, played it. Yeah. And you know what? And I just, I just started playing. The only thing that, what's funny is I met Questlove at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame a couple weeks ago, and he was like, when I was 11, I was trying to figure out what that drum beat is. I couldn't figure out what you were doing. Okay, so the only thing, the beat's easy, but the thing that I did that is different is instead of playing that do-do-da, do-do, it was, instead of being on a tom-tom, a floor tom, I was using my kick, so I'm going, And the reason I did that is, I actually did think about this, was because, you know, your foot, your leg, it's more powerful than your arm.
Right.
And I wanted to fucking bash that.
And hear that feeling.
Yeah, I wanted to, exactly, to physically be able to feel the vibration of that kick, you know? And so I did it on my kick drum instead of my floor top.
So my
kick is leading the way.
That was a hook.
It was a hook.
See, now this is what we try to teach the younger generation coming up. You know, because back in the day, drummers didn't get credit for that. That should have been, you know, I don't, you know, I'm not to, that's another whole story that we can get into.
Is.
But
yeah.
Drummers should get credit for certain things, because without that beat, that song may not have been what it was.
You know, I feel 100% that way. And I think right off the bat of another song, I think of Hunt Sales with Lust for Life. You know?
And
that.
Then that, Bruce Gary.
Okay,
with,
yeah, you know what the song is the minute you hear that beat. Only a handful of drummers can have take that kind of credit.
Right.
Hunt's
I
one
agree.
Of them.
Yep.
And, you know, it and with We Got the Beat is sort of exceptional in that it the song is really about the drum beat.
Yeah.
You know,
you got the beat. I mean, come on, it's like it's an anthem. You know,
it
became an anthem.
Yeah, I don't know what would have happened if it
See,
didn't
now,
have that
when, beat. When you guys first came out in the '80s, you know, I was already on, you know, playing, and I was already on scene. I didn't think of you like as a girl group. To me, I just liked the band. I just liked the music.
Wow, that is really
cute.
Nice to hear.
You were all cute, and it was like, okay, this is cool. It wasn't, because I was never one of those, like, I'm still against this hit like a girl thing. I know I'm going to get in trouble for saying that, because I was never one of those ones that said, oh, you're pretty good for a girl.
I know.
You know, that was,
and
like,
you know,
degrading.
What?
It was
a
like,
lot of people said that.
Of course. That's
I'm
the way
really
the whole
good
bit,
for a girl.
To this day, people are still doing it, and now there's more female drummers than ever before.
There sure is.
So we try to teach them, you know, it's like, get involved in the songwriting, get in there with your band, and let's talk a little bit about being in a band. What advice can you give these young, because me growing up in a band, you being in a band, you can tell, I mean, you know, we spoke about the Beatles before, the new documentary coming out. When you're in a band, there's a magic, and bands that last forever, because you guys last forever, and congratulations on the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Thank you.
That was just last week, so
well,
I mean, that's like,
that's heavy.
About fucking time, but
yeah,
still,
so,
but it's still an honor.
I'm still floating on air with that.
But that's the thing, it's like, the five of you, that's what made the Go-Go's the Go-Go's.
It was the five of us individually putting our parts into every song that gave this band the sound that we now know as the Go-Go's, that made us successful.
Right.
You know, to me, man, the song is no good unless you put it on the right place to sell it. Like, you can write as many songs as you want, but unless you have the right platform to sell that song, it doesn't mean anything.
Right.
And vice versa. You can be the greatest player in the world, but if you don't have a good song to play, you're screwed. So to me, one, it's a 50-50 thing. One needs the other. And that's why I always have believed, and believe to this day, that everything, when you're in a band, should be split 50-50 with everybody. It should be split among everybody getting the same amount of money, because without those particular members in that band,
that's right,
it wouldn't be what it is.
I agree.
When you got a hit song, it's all those elements combined that make it a hit song.
And all the bands that do that, I know Queen did
well,
that.
Well, they last forever.
They last forever.
They don't break up.
Right.
The bands that don't split.
They don't fight.
I know managers now that won't sign a new band unless they split everything equally. Because they know if the band has any amount of success, they're going to break up because somebody's making more money than
and
somebody else.
If somebody wants to go out and do their own solo record, they
do
go
it.
Their solo,
sure.
And then they come back to the band.
Agreed, 100%.
I agree.
Excellent
advice. Okay.
To me, it's purely logic, you know? It's a very logical thing here, you know? I mean,
I know, but believe it or not, you know, you still have egos.
I know.
Egos are always going to be
part
of our business.
Of course.
You got to have an ego to a certain point.
You do. That sort of propels you.
Right.
And
you got to have that friendly competition.
Yeah.
Oh, you're going to do this beat? Well, I'll check this out. I got to do this beat now, you know. So,
I agree. It all adds up.
But it has
up.
To be friendly. It has to be friendly competition.
Well, yeah, because you guys have ultimately one goal. You know,
right?
You have the same goal,
right? You want to go be on the radio. You want that song to be a hit.
That's right. And you want as many people as possible to hear what you do.
So now I got to give you credit because I mean, you don't get the credit for really influencing. See, I always go through this whole thing. There's certain drummers, and then certain drummers come along. They're great, great drummers. But then you have certain drummers that come along, and they influence a whole generation to play drums. So you, being that you were a female, and it was unheard of back then, even though I didn't look at it that way, I just looked at, oh, these five cute girls, and they're on MTV all day long. It's like, yeah, I like this.
And
I
you like
the
what
song.
You hear.
I
know?
Like the music.
You
right.
You got to close your eyes and listen anyway. Right. It's music. It's
that's,
your ears.
That's
it's...
what it was about. And then, of course, the video, of course, MTV at that point, you know, that's what broke all those bands. And then you girls look great. So, of course, then as a guy, yeah, I'm going to watch the video every time it comes on. Sure. It's like, why not? But I already knew the songs. I already appreciated the songs. But you, as a female drummer back then, there wasn't that many female drummers. I think we said Mo Tucker was the only other one.
Well, I'm just saying, no, there were other female drummers. But when we got inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame a couple weeks ago, it was brought to my attention that I'm the second female drummer to be inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And the first one was Mo Tucker.
Right, because I tried looking
at it. And that was a sad fucking statement, you know?
Yeah, well, and I can't believe we found out today that you told me that the Runaways, I thought they were in.
Oh, no.
So only Joan is in by
yeah.
herself, yeah. Because
yeah.
I remember when Joan got in, Tommy got in, because it was great for Tommy Price, because Billboard took out a full page ad. Well, Joan took it out for him, which was, I mean, to
Joan's
for
a
somebody,
good girl.
For somebody to do that for their drummer is
she's a
is
good
a
girl.
Cool, yeah,
she deserves all the props she gets. She's a badass, and
but
she's
you don't
a lot
get the
people.
Credit that you deserve by influencing so many girls to pick up drumsticks.
You know,
and guys.
Yeah, I don't. It's not something that I think about a lot, but when it's brought to my attention, all I can say is that I'm really grateful when I hear that I've influenced someone to pick up a set of sticks and want to play. Or if I've influenced a guy or a girl to want to sit down and write a song.
Right.
Or to just to be involved in music, you know? Sort of the idea, if she can do it, I can do it. Mm-hmm. And you know what? That's true. Mm-hmm. If I can do it, yeah. I come from, Baltimore. My family, I grew up in a very blue-collar neighborhood, middle-class blue-collar. My father worked on the docks, and I had a dream growing up. And when you're 11 years old and you see Zeppelin opening for The Who, that dream's got to come true.
Keith Moon and John Bonham, God rest their souls. But I mean, yeah, I mean, that's like, I could just picture you.
I write in the first line of the book, I think, is Baptism by Fire. Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. So your brother had a lot. He took you to the concert, right?
Yeah, John did.
At 11 years old.
Bless his heart. Yeah, he took me. Well, Johnny was listening to the Stones, and I was listening to what I started, you know, when he'd leave, I'd play his records and scratch them all off and shit. You know, he would chase me.
You hear that, Johnny?
Yeah, he'd chase me out of the room, you know. He'd get me. He'd run me into my bedroom, and then I'd get under the bed, and he'd go get a fucking broom. Some of a bitch. You know, and I'd scratch his records. So,
did he play your drums, though?
No, John was never instrumented. Never interested
okay.
in that.
Because sometimes, like, it could have been the opposite. When you left, he would be playing your drums, and you'd come home and say, who touched my drums?
No, my brother was a very studious guy. He was a bookworm. All he was interested, he was just interested. He went to college. He did very well. He wanted to be a history professor, my
there
brother,
you go.
Believe it or not. He's an academic. Wasn't interested.
Yeah, musicians, it takes a certain personality to be a musician.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, and you got to be
hard.
Got to be kind
sometimes.
Of unafraid and,
yeah.
and like, you know, I mean, I left Baltimore, I was 21. John's never left. You know, he's comfortable there. He does very well. He owns apartments and buildings. He's done very well for himself. Everything, as far as my brother and I go, our success is all due to my parents. Who were
the supportive parents? That's what we
say
all the time.
Oh my God!
Especially drums.
They were like two angels sent from heaven. I swear to God, man. My parents were so supportive every step of the way in my career, from me making that first trip to LA, I mean, I don't know if I could be a parent and allow my 21-year-old girl to drive across country in my husband's pickup truck. And I don't know if I could do that, but, you know, I would call them every day. And you know something?
And my cell phones back then.
No, and my whole life, I think I called my mother just about every day. I was extremely close to my parents, very, very close. They were my rock. They were my inspiration. They were my biggest support system. Anything I've become or done that's really worthy of anything is because of them.
That's a beautiful thing.
It's really, and it's true.
And I find that most musicians who do make it to the capacity that you do, they did have the support of their parents.
It's nice to hear. I mean, everybody in
especially
my band.
Drums, it's like, you know, I get people and they say, you know, they'll come here and I'll show them the drums and they go, oh, can I get drums? And the first thing the parents goes, no.
Yeah, because, you know, when I was talking about this the other day. I was like, wow, my parents, they really were saints. Because to allow me, I come home from school every day and before dinner, I do my homework and I get up in that bedroom, put those headphones on and bang on those drums every goddamn day. Now, they couldn't even hear the music. You know, I've got
headphones.
So all I'm
hearing
is drums.
Which
is like...
Even as a drummer sometimes, drums alone just sound like
noise. Yeah, it's maddening. That's maddening.
It sounds like noise.
And they didn't really drink or anything, so I'm going to put up with it, man. Right?
I know. Now, I was fortunate myself that my parents were really...
cool about it, yeah.
Yeah. It's the only way, because otherwise, you know... And like you say, going away, you know, especially back then, yeah, same thing. It's a big thing.
Yeah,
and then being a girl, you know, even though I don't like the stereotype,
but on top of it, yeah, you know what I mean? They feel like you're
and the first band you were in was all guys, right?
It was always guys.
Yeah, because there wasn't too many girls playing at the time.
Right, exactly.
So, yeah, that's a big thing for your parents that they believed in you, that they let you do.
They absolutely did, and they were just...
They raised you right. They knew you were a good girl. They knew that you, you know, had a good head on your shoulders.
I think, yeah, I think so. They did. They certainly had to trust me in a major way to allow me to leave my comfort zone, my safety zone.
Right.
You know.
So let's talk about you as a songwriter now, because I'm just finding that out myself. And I listened to House of Shock last night, and it was great. And you talk about that in the book, of course.
Yeah.
But let's talk about, I didn't know, you wrote a song for Miley Cyrus and for Selena Gomez.
Yeah.
Tell me about that.
Well, you know, when I started to take songwriting more seriously was probably on the second record of the Go-Go's second album. And then I just started to really try to get better at it. And I worked at it for years. And I had some songs with the Go-Go's. Then when the band broke up from 85 to 90, I was like, what in the hell am I going to do? I'm not cut out to be a studio drummer. I gotta put a band together. That's my comfort zone as a band. Right. I love being in a band. And so I did. House of Shock was basically myself and a fellow named Vance DeGeneres, whose sister happens to be Ellen.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, you see? That's right. It's all,
all coming together, right?
You never put two and two together.
Crazy. He had just moved from New Orleans, and he was in L.A., and we found each other and started working and writing. And his sister was just coming into L.A. and playing, you know, comedy
shows. Yeah. Wow.
Right. He's like, oh, my sister's a comedian. And so, you know, we started hanging out with Ellen. And, you know, she
hung out with a lot of John Belushi.
I hung out with John Belushi. Yeah. John was a friend.
Steve Martin.
I mean, look, I've been around. So,
but it's comedians. It's like, it's pretty cool. It's like,
well, that Steve Martin is not the Steve Martin you think of. The guy.
Oh,
that
is that the agent?
No, it's the Steve Martin. He's a filmmaker. His name's.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because I know when you guys did Saturday Night Live, that was a big thing.
Yeah. No, the Steve Martin was the fellow that is still my friend, and his brother Doug. They're identical redheaded twins. Did the art design for this book. Well, there's a picture of the two of them in the book.
Right.
And Steve's the guy that encouraged me to come to L.A. and let me stay at his house and introduce me to the Go-Go's.
There you go.
Right? See, so, you know, yeah,
that's
man.
The thing about, you know.
I've known those guys since 1978, and I love them both. They're still my very dear friends.
That's great.
Yeah, it's very important when you find good people to just always keep in contact and and remember what's important in life, and that's love and good friends, and being healthy, of course, but whatever. Anyway, where the hell were we? Oh, songwriting.
Yeah, with the Miley Cyrus.
So then Vance and I put the band together, and we wrote stuff. We did one show we played. I got Miles Copeland became my manager. I asked Miles to manage the band.
And you were a fan of Stewart, obviously, yeah, because you guys played, you opened for the Police, right?
For Police on
tour. And the Rolling Stones.
And and Bowie and all that. Whatever.
What a career.
So
unbelievable career.
I can't believe that I've had this life. Anyway, okay, so we did the House of Shock. We did one show at the Roxy and got a record deal. That's pretty incredible, I'd say. But it didn't work out. We put the record out and it was starting to get some steam. It was great. And then the whole regime changed.
Well, that's when, I was going to say, didn't everybody, that's when the industry
got fired. They all got fired. And Tom Wally, who was the A&R guy that had signed me, said, Gina, I'm going to let you know right before this comes down. If you want out of your deal now, I will let you out because everybody's getting fired. So, of course, I said, yeah, I want out.
Right,
I don't want to be stuck in a deal and be a tax write-off for the fucking record company, exactly. Which happens to
a lot.
And
you don't have the support of the people who actually brought
you in. The people that come in aren't interested in you. They didn't sign you.
Right.
They want to bring in, they want to make a name for themselves and bring in new people.
Right.
So everybody knows that story. So whatever. I left. I got fed up with the business. Came to New York. Started to take songwriting even to the next level where I didn't want to be in a band. I just wanted to be a writer. So I came here and I got a publishing deal at MCA with a fellow named John Alexander signed me. And I just worked here for many months and wrote with lots of different people. And in the meantime, the Go-Go's had gotten back together in 1990. We've since been together since 1990 and we play every year just about. And
and next year there's going to be some shows, right?
Yeah. So let me finish my whole songwriting shit because you're getting ahead of me and then I won't remember what the hell I'm talking about. I started really, really concentrating on songwriting and still doing the Go-Go stuff. And and then, like in 2000, whatever, I don't know, I started working with these other two fellows, and I had an in at Disney. And Miley Cyrus was still at Disney, and Selena Gomez was a new artist at Disney. And I was writing for a project that the Go-Go's were doing, and as it turns out, that didn't work out. They were trying to put together a new version of the Go-Go's, a young version of the Go-Go's, didn't work out. But they loved the songs that I had handed in.
Nice.
Okay, so they took him to the head of A&R there, and he played this song Breakout for Miley. She had finished her record, and she heard the song and went in and recorded it, and it became the title track and the name of the album, Breakout. So that was like, oh, yes.
Wow.
And then he said, hey, I got another artist, her name's Miley Cyrus. So we started writing for her. We wrote four songs and got all four on the record, and also the title track, the name of the album.
So
that was really great. And then
starting on the bass and then playing guitar and back then, and then being in a song-oriented band, it all paid off.
Yeah, you know, I don't know. I just feel like you're capable of as much as you want to put yourself out there. If you have it in you, belief and
determination,
you know, you can do it. I did it.
Yep. And you did it well.
And I'm, you know, I worked hard, but I really have stayed focused on what's important. And regardless, music is like the biggest addiction I'll ever have in my life. I could never get away from it. I've tried.
Right.
I've tried walking away from it.
Right.
It pulls you back in. It's like, it's so ingrained in my being, you know?
It's what you are.
It is what I am, and it'll never go away.
That's you, and it shouldn't. You're one of the most successful artists on the planet. You're in a successful band. You know, you did it. You did it, and you're in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Yeah. That's always nice to be recognized in that way.
And
right?
Before we go, do you think the Go-Go's are going to do a new record?
I don't know. But I can tell you one thing: we're working on a project right now with someone who is incredible. And
we won't say yet.
Very powerful.
We're saying that for your cover
in the
story.
Business. And this project that we're working on, I'm thinking will happen in 2022, and there will definitely be music involved. So we'll be
writing some stuff. And you guys had a Broadway show, right?
Yeah, it just opened up again. We had a Broadway show called Head Over Heels.
Right.
And it just opened up at the Pasadena Playhouse this past week. So it'll be around. The musical is going to be around.
The music is going to be around forever.
You know,
no songs.
And the documentary was incredible.
Yeah, the documentary.
And sort of like opened everybody's eyes to what was, you know, to who the Go-Go's really are, where we come from, that we were really a punk band, and, you know, and then the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and then my book, and my book tour, and we're doing shows. It's all really good.
You know, it's great. Congratulations on all your success. I wish you continued success.
I am so grateful. Thank you, my darling. It's such a pleasure. Mwah.
Check it out.
It's good. It's a good book.
It's excellent. And thank you for tuning in, and we will see you next time on the Modern Drama Podcast.
Yeah.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.